Isn't this a sports show?
Here are seven incredible sex positions we can't wait to show Jesus when he finally returns to Earth.
Almost entirely.
Oh, can I get an amen?
Amen!
Good work, Beards.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Me and my housemates were taking, like, family photos around the dumpster because it was really just very fitting.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Curtis might have said the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me in my life. He said, the more, like, ridiculous what you're wearing is, the less ridiculous it seems on you. And that is something that I've been waiting to hear for so long.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
You're the best, Josh. Appreciate it, man.
Oh, I said I'm the best. I love talking to him. I would have said that even if he didn't say that I was the best. But that's sort of a symbiotic relationship there. He said, I think he's the best. No, Brandon, you're the best. Okay, I'm the best.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Happy Friday. It's a red Friday. That's all good and everything. Beards, is it safe to say that there's kind of an air of frustration around us today? Is that reasonable?
Maybe.
We're not going to, like, spend a bunch of time on it, but I'm just sort of realizing now, as we start this show, I think Beards and I just have some, like, pent-up angst that may find its way seeping through the show today. We're going to talk about Ezekiel Elliott in just a second. We're going to talk about Tom Bahali in just a second. We're going to talk about what Andy Reid said about Tom Bahali and also the update on Tom Bahali's contract. It's all really, really weird, you guys. I don't have answers for it. I have interpretations. I have guesses. And it's all weird and not great. We're going to do that. Later, we might even talk about the fact that someone during their last day at Twitter deleted Donald Trump's Twitter account for about, like, 4 minutes. We might even talk about that at some point. But the logical place we start today, the obvious place, of course, is following up on a story from yesterday. The poll has 34 minutes left if you would like to get in before it closes 33 minutes from now. Who wants to date at Beards McFly? The two options are me, exclamation point, or somebody, I'm sure. And with a whopping 26 votes on this poll, and I'm going to retweet it again right now. So if anybody wants to follow me at JB Briscoe, you'll see the poll pop up now on your timeline.
Of course, in a poll about who wants to date me, you make this about yourself.
That's right. Absolutely. I got good news, Beards. Of the 26 votes, 3 people, not 3%, 3 people said that they want to date you.
Are we sure they're not, like, spam accounts?
No, absolutely not. That's an absolute possibility. But 3 votes is 3 votes. You don't even need three to be happy. You don't need to date 3 people to be happy. 2 will do just fine. It's a little joke there. It's a little lighthearted infidelity joke to start your afternoon going into the weekend. God. What is wrong with us?
A lot of things, man.
But 88% of people said somebody, I'm sure. 12% said me. So it's 12% of 26 is a little under 3. Or a little over 3. I'm guessing that's just Twitter doing its best to get to 3%. Let's start. There are 2 confusing stories that directly impact the Chiefs. There's Tom Bahali's return to the Chiefs, and there is Ezekiel Elliott's return to the Cowboys. Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott to the Cowboys only matters for 1 week. Tom Bahali to the Chiefs might matter for the rest of the season. We don't know if he's going to be back for this week. Elliott, though, has the larger impact for the now, so I guess we'll start there. He's back again. Ezekiel Elliott is back.
Like a cockroach.
Like, yes. Like some unkillable organism. Here is a timeline of suspensions or lack thereof for Ezekiel Elliott. August 11th, suspended. August 15th, first appeal. August 29th, not suspended. September 5th, suspended. September 8th, not suspended. September 11th, suspended. October 3rd, not suspended. October 13th, suspended. October 16th, suspension confirmed. October 17th, not suspended. October 20th, suspended. October 23rd, not suspended. October 31st, suspended. November 3rd, not suspended. 14 updates there that I just gave you. 14 updates, a dozen changes in status. And my gut reaction to this was that the NFL has got to get its bleep together. But Seth Kizer, who was on the show yesterday, and Johnny Carver, a friend of mine who's on Twitter at CarverJohnny, both Seth is a lawyer, and Johnny's in law school, like, currently. And I wanted to make sure that I framed what I said accurately. My issue with the NFL is just how powerless they seem right now. It started, I guess, with Brady, but there was some rumbling with the Ray Rice stuff. And now with Ezekiel Elliott, NFL suspensions with any sort of questionable merit are these long, drawn-out legal battles. And my knee-jerk reaction is the NFL has to get its ducks more in a row than they've gotten them in these last two high-profile instances. It's not fun. It's not interesting anymore. And I'm not just annoyed because now the Chiefs have to play Ezekiel Elliott. We'll obviously talk about the game really soon here. And something that Seth tweeted that was interesting, he just said, honestly, this disgusts me. The speed with which he can obtain legal relief compared to someone in a custody dispute or in jail is gross. Which, you know, it's about money. It's always about money. But I thought his perspective on that was interesting. And Johnny said concisely, he said, the NFL is trying to protect its power that they've been given through the CBA. It's just that this is how appeal processes work in our court system. The back and forth isn't necessarily NFL's fault. I understand the back and forth, and I understand the appeal system, and I understand that having ways that you can appeal legal rulings is really important in a good justice system, because we get stuff like this wrong. That just happens. But the way that it moves in the NFL and the way that Ezekiel Elliott has bounced back and forth over these last few months is silly. It's exhausting. It's inconsistent. It makes the NFL seem extraordinarily weak. And Seth also pointed out that lots of companies can lose their disciplinary practices if they're actually challenged. It's just rare that they are. And that's where the NFL is. They're having the disciplinary practices challenged, and they're getting absolutely trounced. Even though Brady ended up serving a 4-game suspension, and even if Elliott eventually does, this is a loss for the NFL, just like Brady was a loss for the NFL. And it's just exhausting. And maybe this is sort of the attitude of some of the people who are sick of, like, the Kaepernick stuff. And by the way, you know, there are six or seven NFL owners have now been called to testify or whatever in this collusion case. And a few owners have been requested to have their phones turned over, which is never going to happen. But can you imagine just getting the Daniel Snyder, Bob McNair, Jerry Jones group text chain? Just reading that, because that sounds amazing. But this is a really bad look for the NFL. And I'm not really here to protect the NFL. I'm here because it's bad for the product. It's trying to suspend him for six games. On the evidence they have, they needed to be sure about, I guess. I don't know. But now we're in this actual process. I'm exhausted by it. So, You can dive into that as deeply or as shallowly as you want. Whatever the last 5 minutes of conversation were, that's probably the exact level that we're going to get to today, unless literally more news breaks throughout the show. It's going to happen. He's going to play on Sunday. If anything else interesting happens, maybe we'll talk about it more later. But that's probably as deep as we'll be able to dive into the legal rabbit hole here. He's playing on Sunday, though. Unless he's not. The other news of the day, we talked yesterday about Tom Bahaly and his surprise non-activation, and then his actual activation, where he was supposed to be activated back on Wednesday. He was actually activated on Thursday. Well, now we have a little bit of a reason why that may have been. Ian Rappaport tweeted today that the Chiefs' Tom Bahaly, now practicing, had his contract tweaked. He got a $250,000 signing bonus and a $1 million from 2018 moved from base salary to a March 1st roster bonus. Now, hear me out. I don't know if that's a part of any of his guaranteed money from 2018. It might not be. But it seems like this is essentially giving Tom Bahaly $250,000 to make him even easier to release next year. And maybe there's a little bit of a cause for Bahaly to say, listen, if you're going to cut me, you better do it by March 1st, because obviously it costs you $1 million if you don't. So it makes the Chiefs make their decision a little bit earlier on. And so maybe it gives Tom Bahaly an extra month or two. More than that, really. It gives Tom Bahaly a good extra chunk of time to find another team. Or it just gives him $1 million if the Chiefs don't make up their minds before March 1st. They have to make up their minds before March 1st, though. But it's kind of bizarre, because if that's not guaranteed money, moving that up to a roster bonus doesn't really make any sense. Why would they move $1 million from 2018 up to March 1st? Something that he would make instead in August, now he could make in March. If there's not some sort of relief for the Chiefs, then that doesn't make much sense. The whole thing is confusing at this point. And Andy Reid spoke with the media today, and I went through and just cut out all of the questions and all of his answers about Tom Bahaly. And it was confusing before this. It hasn't been made less confusing by Andy Reid. Do we have the audio, Beards? Listen to the things that Andy Reid said here. Again, spliced together the questions that he got about Tom Bahaly and the answers that he gave today out of practice.
How did Tom Bahaly look the last couple of days?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he did all right. He did all right. Yeah, knocking some rust off there. Yeah.
Probably too early to bring Tom back, or not really, just a chance. Got to see.
Yeah, I don't. I'll talk to Brett about it afterwards. But I mean, he was just knocking. I mean, literally just knocking the rust off today. So,
Andy, longer term on Tom, what's reasonable to expect from him at this point?
I don't know. I mean, we're literally taking this day by day and just seeing. Let's just see what happens. You know, see how it goes here, and then play it day by day. It's really how everything holds up down there.
Bunch of things. I'll talk to Brett about it as an answer to a question of, how did he look? When is he coming back? When might you activate him? I'll talk to Brett about it. It's really bizarre, because Brett Veach isn't the guy determining if Tom Bahaly can be useful for this defense yet. I would think that would be more of a Bob Sutton question. And then an Andy Reid question, and they just tell Veach, hey, man, it's time to – let's get Tom out here. We need help, and he can help. Really weird for Andy Reid to say, I'll talk to Brett about it. And a lot of, we'll see how it goes, take it day by day. That sounds like a whole lot of nothing. And he said towards the end, you know, we're just going to wait and see how it holds up down there. Down there is Tom Bahali's knees. And at this point, Tom Bahali's knee health cannot be expected to be anything other than abysmal. I don't know how you can be optimistic about this. It's really confusing. Andy Reid's tone on this is really, really confusing. Also, he said that he was out there literally knocking the rust off today. That must have been horrifying. You've got a 75-year-old Tom Bahali running around practice just having rust falling off of his body, literally knocking the rust off, hitting some pads, rust comes shooting out of his knees. Which, by the way, that's probably his big medical problem, if he's literally knocking rust off of his body. It's brutal. Horrifying. It's weird. It's very, very strange. The logic behind whatever is going on with Tom Bahali is confusing to me. And Andy Reid sounds as lost and confused as anybody. The Chiefs, by the way, also are not going to have Albert Wilson or Dee Ford in this game against the Cowboys. If Tom Bahali doesn't play, and at this point you cannot expect him to, maybe they make a move that just shocks everybody. But it would be shocking. So if the expectation of no Tom Bahali does go through, if the expectation of no Tom Bahali is accurate, then you've got Frank Zombo being backed up even by who at this point? Ukemi Eligwe, maybe? In fact, I'm curious now. If I can find a Chiefs depth chart really quick. As to who would even be listed behind Zombo at this point. It's Houston and Ford, and then Holly is brought in, and Daddy Nicholas is still, I guess, on the pup list. Haven't heard any news about him. I guess Tano Passanio? Tano Passanio is the only other outside linebacker on the roster. So if, God forbid, this is the week that Justin Houston's knee acts up. God forbid that Frank Zombo gets hurt. Really, frankly, the fact that Frank Zombo has to play a lot is not very encouraging to me. Tano Passanio, who has not apparently earned the trust of the Chiefs defensively, would be the guy who has to step into probably a rather large role this week. And that is concerning. But that's also the only option. So Tom Bahali is back, but no one really knows what's going on with him. His updated contract doesn't make any sense. Ezekiel Elliott is back. He's going to play on Sunday, which is bad news for the Chiefs. The Chiefs won't have Albert Wilson or Dee Ford. Is there much of a reason to be optimistic about the Chiefs going forward, going into Dallas this week? What about the run defense? We talked about the run defense a lot this week. Now Ezekiel Elliott lining up opposite this struggling Chiefs run defense. Talked to Seth Kizer a little bit about how to fix it yesterday. A couple more ideas have trickled in. We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
This has been the most technically challenging week of this show's existence. Fair?
beyond fair.
Like, it's a blowout.
Runaway.
Runaway.
Unanimous MVP.
The unanimous worst technical week in the history of this show. Not even Beards' fault.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Oh, and I will tell you whenever it's Beards' fault.
Thank you.
On ESPN Kansas City.
It's not really getting better here, is it? Like, during the first segment, the internet pooped out. So I had to restart the Facebook. And if it's not the hissing monitor, which is gone today, which is unbelievable.
It's been replaced with an actual monitor that looks halfway okay.
Shocking.
That's high praise from us around here.
That got fixed. So now the internet today dumps out. I can't... Oh, there's just... It's everything, always. I think that's the best way to put it. Also, for some reason, the show Bones is on my left TV today.
Probably because I had it on TNT last night for the basketball games, and nobody just decided to switch 47.
Yeah, that would be it. And of course, I can't change it in here because our TVs run on a complex system of abacuses and wizarding spells.
That you need to be in a certain spot for the remotes to actually work in.
Like, you have to go down the hallway. And
twice.
Then, yeah.
And we moved everything because they decided to get some TVs for the conference room that nobody uses.
I used them twice.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's twice more than anybody else has.
You can't make Leonard out of this stuff, Beards. We don't want to leave any sort of evidence that we had these conversations. Whenever this whole building burns down, a terrible electrical fire, you and I are going to be we're going to be the first two, the two least surprised people. And then we're going to be the first two arrested as suspects. And I don't want to be arrested as a suspect. And I've already told you, if there was a felony that I was going to commit, it would not be arson. And I'm already on trial for the aggressive cuddling that came up yesterday and everything, so it's... I gotta stay clean.
So apparently that's been suspended so you can come back on the show?
Yeah.
You're
my
lawyer, Ezekiel Elliott of ESPN Kansas City.
Yes, I keep appealing my suspensions for my aggressive cuddling, and then, yeah. It's not a good segue into anything else. So here, let's just... Oh, they're talking right now and around the horn that Justin Verlander might miss the World Series parade so he can go marry Kate Upton in Italy. Go for it, Justin.
I switched my TV over because the one side was asleep, and then I forgot it's just Bones.
Dang it!
So Beards' my TV options are Bones and Around the Horn. Beards' TV option is a bouncing DirecTV logo and Bones.
And also a blank channel that has nothing on it.
Ever.
Ever.
I don't know why it exists. Hey, did you see that some NFL owners are going to be deposed in that Colin Kaepernick collusion case?
What?
Listen, so this is the thing that I just heard recently, it was 6 or 7. But Schefter said first that 3 of the NFL's most prominent owners, Jerry Jones, Robert Kraft, and Bob McNair, will be deposed and asked to turn over their cell phone and email records related to the case. I got nothing long term. This is not going to be a whole segment conversation. But I hope that goes through, just because I would love to have the general public privy to, again, the Jerry Jones, Bob McNair, Robert Kraft group chat.
Do you think they were like, yo, Jerry, we heard ESPN Kansas City yesterday, and that was the first time we'd ever heard your Papa John's commercial?
Very much so.
You were killing it.
In fact, I'm guessing that they're saying, like a month apart, like, hey, Jerry, super cool that you had custom napkins for your Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Also, dope bars that you spat for that Papa John's commercial. Because I think Robert Kraft and Bob McNair are longtime listeners of this show. Day one. Literally day one. Day one was Jerry Jones.
They got notifications.
Oh, yeah. They're subscribed on their flip phones. I don't know how it works, but...
You think they're cheap enough for flip phones?
They have a personal slave come recite the podcast to them. They have a slave that listens to the podcast and then comes back and just reads it to them in person. Now, see, I think that would kill the comedic timing. So they probably just have, they have a slave that downloads the podcast for them and then they follow them around with like a giant boombox. I should probably say servant.
Yeah. I had that thought.
So I was thinking like slaves, like in the, like the Egyptian sense, because I was imagining like Jerry Jones in a toga, like eating, having someone feeding him grapes while cooling him down with a palm branch, a palm tree branch. More that and less American history. Although Bob McNair, jeez. Speaking of the Chiefs' run defense, because we were doing that. We never got to it yesterday, but Bob Sutton talked to the media. He batted around some things about the run defense. Let's go ahead. Do you have both of those Sutton clips, Beards?
I do. Which one do you want first?
The one that has the number one in the file name.
That would make sense.
That was like 3 minutes, though, right?
2.5.
Okay. All right, fine. Buckle up. Here's 2.5 minutes. There's a point to this, I promise. I'm not just giving you 2.5 minutes of Bob Sutton just for kicks and giggles. But here's 2.5 minutes of Bob Sutton trying to talk about the flaws in the interior offensive line. This starts with the question, I think, from Cody asking about if the middle of the run defense is the biggest problem. And then Bob Sutton goes on to say that who knows?
Bob, I think it was 22 carries for 130 up the middle against the defense last week. Is that where you see the biggest problem being in the run defense?
Well, I don't know if it's, you know, sometimes the ball goes in the middle for different reasons. I would just say, you know, our run defense hasn't been as nearly as good as we need it to be. You know, if we want to keep going in here, you know, we got to get the run defense moving and cranking and going. And, you know, like we always say, you know, run defense is no different than pass defense. You know, it involves everybody, you know, and so, you know, whether you're the last safety back there, you got to be involved when the time comes and got to go through all your progressions and that. And up front, you got to do the same thing. You got to, you know, it starts with you gotta strike your opponent, and then you gotta be able to get off blocks, and you know, you have to keep everybody coordinated as they do that. You know, so you don't open natural seams in there and go. You know, there's some plays that are tough plays because you know, you have all different kinds of calls. Sometimes you're calling a defense that is better suited for a particular kind of passing game, and maybe they run in that and. You know, those are you got to kind of live through. You know, you kind of, that's just the way it is. You know, if you can't always just play even. You know, where it's just I'm playing half of this and half of that. You know, you, that's what you'd like to do. You'd like to get it where you know, kind of what's going on. You know, whether it's run or pass.
Do you see like do you feel like you're getting enough out of like the cornerbacks? You mentioned the safety play and stuff too.
No, I don't. I wasn't really saying that. I was just saying that it takes everybody to play good run defense because eventually everybody on offense is blocking. So who's ever getting blocked has to be able to squeeze plays, get off the ball, and get there. And you know, the quicker and faster you do it, no different than, you know, we ask the linemen, hey, hey, it was a pass throw, and get out of the stack and get back to the ball as best you can. You're not going to help on many plays, but if it's an underneath pass, a screen pass, whatever, you can be a factor. And that's the same for DBs, linebackers, play guys on the opposite side of the runs. It could be anybody. I wasn't really trying to make a point about DBs. I was just trying to make a point that it's to make these plays work, you usually have 11 offensive players that are involved, and you need 11 defensive players that are always working. Somebody in every defense, and I'm probably true on offense, somebody has a harder job than somebody else based on what the strength of the defense is and depending on where they attack, you know.
One thing in there from Bob Sutton yesterday sort of stuck out to me. He said, run defense is no different than pass defense. It involves everybody. The immediate knee-jerk response is everyone saying, "Ooh, Marcus Peters needs to tackle more." Listen, man. You can take this from Bob Sutton's perspective or from a fan's perspective, whatever. Listen, this is not about the safeties filling the gaps. This is not about the corners getting involved. The Chiefs have a front seven problem. And if you didn't hear yesterday's show, the interview with Seth Kizer was really, really, really good as we discussed what's going on with the Chiefs, what's the problem with the Chiefs' run defense. They're getting blown off the ball. The defensive linemen aren't winning their one-on-one matchups. They're doing a lot of two-down lineman stuff where they essentially make the whole front seven too light. They take Benny Logan off, and then you've got Alan Bailey and Chris Jones, the two-down linemen, being flanked by Justin Houston and now Frank Zombo. And then you have Daniel Sorensen playing up at a linebacker depth. Daniel Sorensen is not a linebacker. Justin Houston and Frank Zombo and Dee Ford are not defensive ends. Alan Bailey and Chris Jones aren't defensive tackles in that sense. You've got a whole defense of guys playing out of place whenever you put yourself in that sort of format, in that scheme. It's really baffling. I mean, I have some solutions here in a second. Here's one more bit of audio from Bob Sutton. This is Bob Sutton on having to live with some things.
You said a couple answers ago, sometimes you have to live with some things. Is mm-hmm. part of what you're saying there, I don't think it's a secret you guys prioritize pass defense, defending the pass. Is that part of what you're saying? That
no, I just, I well, no, I think, yeah, there's sometimes you, if you sometimes you call pass, it's you're lighter because you got everybody uptight. And the pass maybe is more accessible, you know, and that's what a quarterback's trying to figure out all the time. And then sometimes you're playing more from a coverage standpoint, and you might have less people, quote, in the box. Then you're going to be, you know, what people would say, you're in a lighter box. So a lighter box says, hey, if you run, you might have a better chance there. Yeah. And do it. Now, you know, every defense in our league tries to keep you from knowing for sure, is it going to be a light box, you know? And sometimes we can talk you into it and not be in a light box. So it's just that, it's no different than anything else, you know. There's a give and take, you know.
We're going to come back to that sound in just a second. But, again, on TNT in front of me, I've been confronted with horribly grisly human remains that was just made it very hard to listen to Bob Sutton because I was watching the grisly remains of a human being be like reassembled for forensic purposes while I was listening to a zombie drone on. So it was just sort of like undead surround sound just then. Kind of disconcerting. All right. Okay. Moving on.
I have more zombie noises.
Everything that Ned Yost says has been...
Dump, get out. We're not talking on the Royals today. That really was horrifying, though. So, in Bob Sutton talking about having to live with some things, and the reporter asking, you know, it's no secret that you're a pass defend first type of team. Sutton even admits, like, yeah, whenever you got kind of a light box up there, which is something that I've been talking about, the light package and everything, something I've been talking about for a couple of weeks now. He said, you know, you might be able to look at that defensive setup and say that you'd have a better chance running against this setup than passing against it. So, yeah. Like I said yesterday, I'm at this point 80% sure that if I was an NFL quarterback, I could do exactly one thing, which would be to call the right audibles against the Chiefs. Because if Daniel Sorensen is playing as a linebacker and you've got Dee Ford and or Frank Zombo playing as a defensive end, I'm going to audible into a run where the ball goes that way. Just run at Dee Ford. Run at Frank Zombo. Put the ball on the ground and go at this super undersized defense. And it's a really weird place to sort of just admittedly take the L, but it's something that Bob Sutton's pretty comfortable with. Now, Matt Verderame had a tweet earlier today that I think is worthy of, like, taking a breath during. He said, the Chiefs have allowed 30 points once. One 100-yard rusher. The defense isn't great, but it's also not the mess people are making it out to be. I agree with that. But it's also the biggest problem currently, which is a good thing. For your biggest problem as a franchise, for your biggest problem to not be a debilitating problem, is a good, it's a good sign that you're doing okay. So I agree with that sentiment. At the same time, if you're doing this in the context of versus the Steelers or Patriots or Eagles in the Super Bowl, if that's how you're holding yourself accountable, if you're holding yourself accountable to the best of the league, then you have to hold yourself to a higher standard and be willing to criticize the flaws as they come up. But I think he's right. Also, we were talking about the next steps. How does this defense get it together? Ryan Scott Hall on Twitter said, Dallas doesn't have a wide receiver that scares you over the top. We touched on that earlier this week. Said, play your base 3-4 and sub Nelson for Sorensen when they go to three receivers. Play Parker single high. I like this. This is something that I was saying a couple days ago. Let Ron Parker be your single high safety. He can handle some of that. You can still have a 7-man front, and you just have to trust Mitchell and Peters and Nelson. If you trust those three guys, and you know that you want to treat Sorensen as a linebacker, just play a linebacker. Kevin Pierre-Louis, Akemi Oligwe, Ramique Wilson, who's never active, but probably would be this week, I would think, with the absence of a bunch of linebackers. Reggie Ragland and Derek Johnson. Fill up your middle of the field with actual inside linebackers. If you're going to run out Frank Zombo, run out Frank Zombo across from Justin Houston. Put Benny Logan in there. Let Roy Miller have a chance again. Put Rakeem Nunez-Rochers out there. You can put bigger bodies out there. And especially Alan Bailey and Chris Jones, those guys are not weaknesses in the pass rush. In fact, that's where they're the best. So if they decide to go ahead and throw the ball on first and 10, you still got a really good chance that Chris Jones or Alan Bailey or Justin Houston are going to make some noise. Let them do that. But give yourself a little bit more of a margin for error with a front seven that can actually handle the run. Also, Seth Kaiser alternatively said, you can go with a 5-man front of 3 defensive linemen and 2 edge defenders. You can get away with 1 linebacker with that front and still have 5 in the secondary. It's another option. Put Logan and Jones and Bailey up there and have Houston and, I guess, Zombo. Put 5 guys in the secondary if you want. Or I guess Houston and DJ would have more sense in that setup. You've got better options. And so this is the place, I guess, this is the place where I am going to be perhaps hypercritical of Bob Sutton. I want to see him adapt to this. I want to see him look at these obvious flaws in this defense and just fix them by trying more with a heavier package. But he hasn't yet. And again, as Matt Verderame pointed out, the Chiefs have given up 30 points once. This isn't an atrocious defense. It's not a huge, overwhelming weakness maybe even like the Raiders. The Chiefs currently have a better offense and a better defense than Oakland. Like, it's not at that level. They gave up 27 to the Patriots and 20 to the Eagles and 24 to the Chargers and 20 to Washington. They gave up 34 to the Texans in a game where I don't think they were going to give up 30 if they weren't putting up 42. So they've actually put up 30. They've given up 30 twice. So Matt had that one wrong. But they gave up 31 and lost to the Raiders. 19 to the Broncos. 19 to the Steelers in the loss. Part of it is about the clock management. And that's something as we look ahead to the game on Sunday. The Cowboys might be able to make this look quite a bit like the Steelers game, except for they've got a better quarterback. Dak Prescott's better than Ben Roethlisberger right now. Also, it's in Dallas. But with Ezekiel Elliott in this game, with his undone suspension once again, the Cowboys are going to have a pretty good chance to really dictate the pace of this game. If the Chiefs don't adjust, and if they give up a 5 or 6 yard carry every first and 10, then Dak Prescott's going to have a chance every second down to shoot deep. They'll pick it up on third down and keep marching. There's going to be a pretty easy pattern of success for the Cowboys unless the Chiefs evolve. Now, for the Chiefs to actually win this game, we'll talk about coming up here in a minute, they're going to have to put up a whole bunch of points of their own, I would expect. It's also how I felt about the Steelers game, though, and they only would have needed 20. Because the Steelers dictated the pace of that game, and the offense just kept giving it back. The defense has some things it needs to correct, and the offense cannot stumble like they did against the Steelers. Beards, what do you love most in this world?
Why?
Quick question.
I don't know. Why?
I didn't ask you to ask me questions. What is something that you love dearly?
Like a physical thing or a conceptual
literally anything,
thing?
Beards. Literally anything. Something that you love dearly.
I mean, we'll go with the stereotypical answer for me of Game of Thrones. There you go. Why?
Do you love your mother, Beards?
Yes.
More, less than Game of Thrones, apparently. Listen to me. Listen to me good. I swear on Game of Thrones and your mother that if you ever give me a break sign again, I'm going to tear your head off.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
But let's get excited about that 69. I mean, that's pretty good this time of year, isn't it?
With Joshua Briscoe.
And I know you're excited about the win, but how about that 69?
On ESPN Kansas City.
Got a screenshot here from what appears to be a Fox affiliate, perhaps in Auburn. The graphic says, semi-truck hauling bees crashes. And somebody retweeted that with, I like to think of hauling bees as an expression for going really fast. As in, for example, man, that truck was really hauling bees. And then the little graphic changes completely. Like, semi-truck hauling bees crashes. Like, oh, he's just going too fast. If you're hauling bees, of course it's going to crash eventually. You haul bees, you drive reckless, yeah, you're gonna crash. Also, apparently Thor Ragnarok is the best-reviewed Marvel movie of all time now. And I don't know if that's going to have to make me go see. Have you seen it yet, Beards?
I have not. I think it just came out today.
Okay.
But I'll probably end up going maybe this weekend.
If I don't go see this, we're going to talk about Chiefs-Broncos in a second. Chiefs-Broncos, Chiefs-Cowboys, chill out. We don't have enough time in this segment. We'll talk about it at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. If I don't go see Thor Ragnarok after it's like hugely critically acclaimed, I think that officially just makes me dead, like Marvel dead to me. Because if I'm not going to go see a really well-reviewed Marvel movie, what Marvel movie am I going to go see? I guess Iron Man's like my favorite Marvel character, but I'm not. I don't really want more of him either.
By the way, the Hauling Beast thing made me think there was a like a tagline or a lower third kind of thing that I remember seeing that was really funny. I couldn't remember what it was. I pulled it up. Man in boxers leads police on brief chase.
Awesome.
So anyway, continue with your Marvel takes.
Oh, I just think Marvel might be dead to me if I don't go see Thor Ragnarok, because what else could make me go see it? Final poll update after 24 hours. I think you might have gotten a fourth vote. It depends on how Twitter's doing this, but who wants to date Beards McFly? 11% of 35 says me. 89% says somebody, I'm sure. So I think you might have gotten four votes. At least three, though. Now it gets kind of complicated, because how do they contact you? Okay, so if you want to, if you're one of those three, you can text Beards at 913.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
You have 24 seconds to preview the NBA season.
Oh, gosh. Really. We're doing this again?
But very concisely. Please be better than last time.
Oh, well,
you do it in 24 seconds and not 15 minutes. Go.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Cool. This is very short-sighted. NBA starts tomorrow. Cleveland-Boston. I don't know if LeBron's playing, which that could be bad. Oh, Josh wants his mic on now. Cool.
What games are you looking forward to the most? Turn my mic off again.
That one. Oklahoma, Golden State, or not Golden State, Oklahoma, New, no.
Truly horrendous.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. Hope you enjoyed that little snippet of Beards McFly's highlight tape.
Probably my worst on-air flow.
It was really bad.
It wasn't great, man.
It was really bad. But bad can be good.
I mean, that wasn't, but sure, it can be.
It can be, though. So the Chiefs and the Cowboys play on Sunday, in case you hadn't heard. It's in Dallas. Ezekiel Elliott's going to be there. D Ford, Albert Wilson will not be. I'm not sure how I feel about this game, to be terribly honest. I'm really not. It's not that I'm pessimistic. It's that I'm really not sure how I feel. Quick side note, I went to the break room, whatever. It's not really a break room. It's just a room with a microwave and a vending machine.
It's the kitchen.
Yeah, it's a kitchen that also has a vending machine.
Yeah.
I went in there to fill up my glass bottle. It's got a winking lemon on it. It's a Facebook Live exclusive. I went to go fill this up with water, and I knew that our vending machine wasn't working, but now the vending machine has a little post-it note on it that says not accepting bills or change. Well, I am a terrible human being, so my first thought was, well, duh, why wouldn't you just say not working? Because you can't, there's not a credit card slot. And then I thought, oh, well, what if we added, like, a second note that said, but if you stick your card in the slot, it works fine. And then I thought...
I was going to say, like, blood sacrifice.
Well, then I thought, like, well, what's next?
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking that if we end up getting a new vending machine, which seems very unlikely because we're still running Windows XP,
yeah,
throughout this whole building, we could do this. And maybe we could even do this if this ever gets fixed. We could print out a sheet of paper that looks very much like an official manual. It says this vending machine has been upgraded to voice recognition technology. Just insert your money and then say the letter and number of the item that you want. I think there's a chance that we could get some people with that.
One or two, maybe.
That's all we need, though.
I know.
One or two, and then evidence that it happened is all I need. Because I just heard, like, I imagine.
I'm trying to think who we could get that would be the best.
Danny would probably be the funniest. And so I'm just thinking, well, Danny goes in, he puts his money into the stairs at that, and we would have to tape that over, like, the number panel.
Oh, that'd be good.
And then Danny's just standing there for 10 minutes, just going, like, B6! Cursing it and kicking the machine. It'd be funny.
It would be funny. That would be great.
So I've workshopped that now. Again, with just, like, the corpses on my left television.
By the way, I noticed this about 2 minutes ago. So we mentioned earlier that my monitor was hissing yesterday.
Turning this off. There's a burned corpse on my screen. I don't want it.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Anyway, we mentioned earlier that my monitor was hissing yesterday.
Now it's on my right screen. Sorry, go ahead. I fixed it.
And it got replaced with a new one?
Yeah.
Well, I quote new one because I say, this is the same monitor that I had when I got my first computer in like 2004.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the exact same thing.
Functional. We should just start saying functional. Got replaced with a functional computer.
There we go.
Do you think we can just go through this whole show by teasing some Chiefs Cowboys talk before ultimately just ending the show without ever shout a score prediction?
I mean, we
end?
Do that anyways.
We do that pretty frequently. God, I almost just decided to make you do another NBA thing.
No thanks.
While I yawned and took a drink, but I will have to take my drink at some other point. We talked about the run defense, we talked about Bob Sutton, we talked about ways to fix it. Talk about Ezekiel Elliott being back. And now I'm at a place where I am not sure how I feel about this game. Like, as of this exact moment, I'm not sure who I would pick. I've gone both directions. I could talk myself into either team here. And here, there are a few things I found today that might inform you one way or another. Ed Werder tweeted that none of the Cowboys' four wins have come versus opponents currently with a winning record. This is their chance. They have Ezekiel Elliott, they have a home game, and they have the Chiefs on a short week. But none of their wins, they're 4-3, none of their wins have come against a team that currently has a winning record. They beat the Giants, they lost to the Broncos. They beat the Cardinals, they lost to the Rams. They lost to the Packers, they beat the Niners, and they beat Washington. But the Cowboys seem to be a team that's gotten better as the season has gone on. They destroyed the 49ers, as they should have. And they pretty well destroyed Washington in Washington. It's a good performance. And I think they're a good football team. You have the Chiefs on a one-day shortened week. No D Ford. Ezekiel Elliott seems to be on a roll again. This does feel like the time for the Cowboys. But they've faced the fourth easiest schedule in the NFL, and they're 4-3. The Chiefs have faced the third hardest schedule, and they're 6-2. That makes you think that you know what the Chiefs have done is real. Yet somehow I'm still skeptical. You're not sure if what the Cowboys have done is real. Yet I'm still fearful of what they will do on Sunday. And you can try to do the matchup breakdown. You can try to say, all right, well, how does this go? How does this go? Where does this bend either direction? But at this point, I'm not even sure that that is going to do it. I think you have to have a fundamental conversation about what you think that each of these teams have shown. In some ways, regardless of their opponents. I think the Chiefs' offense is legitimate. But it also disappeared against the Steelers on the same day that the defense had a hard time dealing with an elite running back and a very, very good offensive line. The Steelers' O-line isn't great, but it's great for Le'Veon Bell. this week the Chiefs face a fantastic running back with a fantastic offensive line. But the Chiefs took that from the Steelers. Didn't even give up 20 points. Lots of yards, not even 20 points, but it was the offense that faltered. That's also the only time that I've really, really been disappointed in the offense. It wasn't great on Monday night either. Seth Kizer put out a piece today about how Alex Smith was actually better than we thought against the Broncos. It's interesting. But the production of the offense wasn't great on Monday night. But the offense has been good. The defense hasn't been embarrassed. As I mentioned earlier, they gave up 30 points twice. Once was in an overtime win. It was in a garbage time win against the Texans. Those were points that didn't count, essentially, or shouldn't have counted. The Raiders game, the defense got picked apart. Dak Prescott is a different type of quarterback than what we've seen for a little bit here. But if I had to compare him to one of the guys that the Chiefs have already played, I'd compare him to Deshaun Watson. Now, Prescott is more poised and more experienced than Watson is, but frankly, not by a ton. And even as the Chiefs gave up a bunch of points to the Texans, as I've mentioned in garbage time, Watson had 75 passing yards at the end of the third quarter. And every other quarterback the Chiefs have played this year has been pretty much a pocket passer. Simeon, Carr, Roethlisberger, Cousins, Rivers, Wentz, Brady. In reverse order there. They handled Deshaun Watson pretty well. One thing that bothered me is how often it seemed like Justin Houston was kind of spying Watson and not getting after him. But I have my real concerns about the Chiefs' pass rush on Sunday. It's Justin Houston and then the front seven. Houston didn't have a running back or an offensive line nearly as good as Ezekiel Elliott in the Cowboys' offensive line. The Cowboys might have... They have one of the two best running backs, at least, the Chiefs have faced this year, as the run defense continues to be a problem. They have one of the two most mobile quarterbacks, probably giving the Chiefs some reason to think that they should run more of those light, fast defensive packages, which backfires whenever it comes to the run. Those matchups concern me. Even as I look over at the Dallas defense and don't have a huge amount of fear. Now, they've gotten some wonderful production from DeMarcus Lawrence, who is starting to look like a star. He's been all over the field. But I'm less than mortified, I suppose, of most of the rest of the things going on across that Dallas line, or across that Dallas defense even. But with that being said, why am I so hesitant to roll with the Chiefs here? I'm not completely convinced that it is logical to the sense of 2017. There are a couple people, I think somebody wrote about this on Twitter, or on somewhere, and then tweeted about it, and it became kind of a Twitter conversation point. The inherent cynicism that comes with being a Chiefs fan demands that we're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. You can tell me anything about the Chiefs in November, and I'm going to wait and see it. I'm going to wait and hope to see it in January before I do any sort of celebrating. Really, I mean that. We have the 9-0 Chiefs, and the memory for me isn't the joy of 9-0 and beating backup and hurt quarterbacks. It's ultimately losing. I mean, really, and it's silly. There is a cutoff point, I suppose. But much less than 40-0 shutouts every week through the first 8 weeks of the season. And I'm gonna go, yeah, but what about against the Steelers in the playoffs? What about having to play in New England? And that's sort of just the place that we live in as Chiefs fans. It's not great. I'm not sure that it's a particularly healthy way to be a fan. But it's just sort of the fatalism that we constantly deal with. There are places where the Chiefs can win this game, by the way. I think we've talked about the defense a lot this week. If we talked about the offense for a two-hour show today, I think by the end of it, we'd probably all be convinced that the Chiefs are going to win this game, or at least be a very, very, very difficult out for the Cowboys. Nick Jacobs tweeted about how Dallas also runs the same sort of 4-2 nickel base on certain personnel packages as the Chiefs do, and it gets them gashed in the run game. In some ways, this is going to be a battle of who blinks first. Because as great as Ezekiel Elliott is, I really think that this could be a Kareem Hunt versus Ezekiel Elliott game. And the guy who gets stopped first loses. I think the quarterback matchup is very even. The running back matchup is very even. The weapons matchup goes slight advantage to the Chiefs, because I would take Travis Kelce certainly over Jason Witten. Even if you take Dez Bryant over Tyreek Hill, which I think is honestly arguable. But if that's super close also, the Chiefs have a Travis Kelce advantage. The depth of the weapons is really worrisome, because it's just DeMarcus Robinson. Jehu Chesson will probably be active. He will be active, certainly, actually. And the Chiefs are pretty limited there. And then D'Anthony Thomas. The Chiefs will have four receivers active this week, unless they bring somebody up between now and game time to fill the spot of Albert Wilson. But I think it's decently reasonable. Also, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif seems on track to play. I think it's reasonable to say that the Chiefs have an offensive head-to-head advantage. I think it's reasonable to say that they might have a defensive advantage. But all of the margins feel so paper thin. Also, though, the Chiefs have been great on the road. They've been great on the road for a couple of years now. They had that crazy streak last year that was phenomenal. But I'm still definitely a few steps removed from confident. And I almost said, you know what, and if the Chiefs go to Dallas and win this, then I'll... And I don't know, well, I'll what? What will I do? No, I won't do anything. I'll still be waiting for January. I'll still be waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'll be waiting for Travis Kelce to get hurt, for Alex Smith to regress, for the defense to get gashed, for the Steelers or the Patriots to win in the playoffs. Because not that I don't think that the Chiefs cannot win this game. Not that I do think, I should say. It's not that I think the Chiefs have no shot here. I really don't think that at all. And I'm looking forward to the game, because it's going to be a chance to judge where this team stands against a good team after just beating a bad team by a sort of suspiciously narrow margin. But you're just pointing at his TV, I think, towards something I can't see.
Do you have NFL Network on?
Let's see. Let's play TV roulette. Nope, just
they're
Burlington
doing
ESPN.
It's the players only show. They're doing Super Bowl predictions. I think that's, is that DeMarcus Ware? I think that is. He says Seahawks defeat Chiefs 27-24.
Is there a way that we can just turn the run the TV through the board
no.
and just play that for no. 40 minutes and let the show finish?
We used to, but no.
But can we really not?
No. It's TV option doesn't work.
Really?
I don't know why. It just doesn't work anymore.
I wasn't going to do it, actually, because I figured that us running NFL Network television broadcasts
that would be bad.
Would get us in trouble.
That would be bad. But no, we just can't physically do it. TV button doesn't work anymore.
What happened?
I don't know.
Isn't that how we run road sporting games?
Through TV, through the simulcast of the TV rights we have, yes. But we have to do it in a very convoluted way.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's
that.
Wow. It's a whole process, man.
Yeah, because you have to, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I have since changed the television now, though, back to TNT, apparently, as I was looking for NFL Network, because I only have the two options. Both the three. I have the ESPN TV, the one that's currently on TNT, and then also the one that just has a weird, like, purple logo for nothing. So I'm now just waiting for more dismembered corpses to show up on my screen.
James Jones does not have the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Who does he have?
Steelers over the Cowboys. Do we want to play this game?
Super Bowl predictions?
No, we...
Or just reading
it. Reacting to
oh, yeah, sure.
players only NFL Network. Football reactions.
If we could just play it, then yes, I absolutely would. If you could play it and then like pause it and react, I think that'd be great radio.
We don't have that technology.
But right.
We can't make it better.
We used to, which is extra amazing.
Also, I don't even have the remote for the TV down here, for the channels.
Yeah, I have the remote that just rotates these two TVs through the two channels that I can see.
I think you're the only person in the building that knows how those two TVs work.
Can I explain it to you really quick?
Go for it. We've already gone down the deep end.
Dead serious? Okay, fine. Hey, I'll pick the Chiefs-Cowboys game next segment. You literally just point the remote at the TV you want to change and then hit up or down on the channel or the volume. It's literally a point-based process. If you sort of point at the middle from far away, then it will change both of them sometimes.
Right.
But if I want to change the right TV, you just point at the right TV and you hit up. You point at the left TV, you hit up. It works just fine.
By the way, somebody else, I didn't see who it was, had the Steelers beating the Saints in the Super Bowl.
Seriously?
Seriously.
That feels very unlikely.
I feel like we are better than that show then, just based on that prediction alone.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Bones is coming back. Let's see. Oh, God. There's blood. I'll give you my prediction of Chiefs Cowboys next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
So I have a cough button in front of me.
You do.
That I'm not sure is actually my cough button. Let's find out. Nope, that's not mine.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Now testing for the second day in a row. Is this my cough button? No. Is this my cough button? No.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I'm going to pick the Chiefs. Now back to Bones.
That was anticlimactic.
Now listen, here's why. I've made you hang on this for 90 minutes. Because I'm sure you were just with bated breath waiting for the prediction. To be terribly honest, if this was not a Chiefs game, I would. If it was another team in the Chiefs uniforms, or vice versa, yeah. If it was the Chiefs in different uniforms, this feels like the exact type of game where I would take the Cowboys and feel pretty good about it. I'm pretty down to take the home teams whenever it's essentially a split. Whenever I can't see a clear advantage from between one team and another, I usually take the home team. I screwed that up on Thursday Night Football because I hate the Jets. But that would have been another instance of something that would have made sense. Like with the Falcons and the Panthers this week, that's another game that's going to be like that. Of, well,
You got the Panthers at home, an inferior team, but by how much? Is it enough? The difference, though, is that the Chiefs have such a road record. They lost on the road at Oakland, but Thursday Night Football is built for weirdness, and that was a bizarre game. They won at New England. They won in L.A. against the Chargers. They won at Houston. That really, being on the road doesn't really scare me. Like, the Steelers on their own scare me. The Patriots still scare me. But the venue doesn't really affect how I pick Chiefs games that strongly. And I think the Chiefs have just the slightest edge in this game. I know this is heretical with how good Alex Smith has been, but I think I would rather have Dak Prescott in this game. I know this is heretical, but barely, but it's close. I know this is heretical to the offensive line, but I'd rather have the Cowboys' offensive line. I know this is heretical to Ezekiel to Kareem Hunt, but I think I'd rather have Ezekiel Elliott in this game. But the Chiefs, all throughout, have more weapons. I think both of these defenses will put up a decent effort. I think both of these defenses will put up some resistance. And this might be my bias seeping through of how I'm generally skeptical of the Chiefs' offense until I see it in January. Might be a grudge that I'm holding from last January and from this last Steelers game. But for me, I think that if you look at how this team is built, you look at the strengths here, you look at the strength of Andy Reid, you look at the investments made in the offense, the offensive line, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill, a relatively meager investment, though, I admit. Alex Smith. I think the pressure is almost always on an Andy Reid team. I think the pressure is almost always going to be on the offense. Is that fair? I don't know. But I think it's true. And so I look to the offense now as the side of the ball that will determine the game more so than the defense. Both of these offenses are going to have chances to win this game. Alex Smith has been really great this year. He's going to have a chance to look really great. I'm a little bit nervous about how this offensive line and company is going to handle DeMarcus Lawrence. I understand. I understand your fears looking back at how Eric Fisher looked at times last week. But I think the offense is going to have chances to win this game. And I'm in a place now because of how Andy Reid teams work. I'm more comfortable with letting the offense try to win the game. It's simply how it's built. Oh, Justin March Lillard also, by the way, is on the Cowboys. Now that's kind of interesting. But DeMarcus Lawrence has 10.5 sacks this year already. That'll probably be Mitchell Schwartz's job. Mitchell Schwartz was great against Von Miller last week. Tyrone Crawford has 4 sacks this year on 14 total tackles. David Irving has 5 sacks this year. The Cowboys have 25 sacks on the year. I think I mentioned earlier, there's the guy, the really young player that's been tremendous. It's been all over the field. Oh, I guess it's Jalen Smith, who also, as I mentioned earlier, just been fantastic. He was the 34th pick in the 2016 draft. it's a place where the offense is going to have a chance against a good pass rush to hold strong. I feel pretty good about Mitchell Schwartz. I feel pretty good about Alex Smith. I feel pretty good about Tyreek Hill. I feel really good about Travis Kelce. I feel really good about Kareem Hunt. We've spent a lot of time talking about this defense. A lot of time talking about Ezekiel Elliott finding the weakest part of this team and exploiting it. I think it's going to be an offensive game. A game where the offense has a chance to kind of prove its worth, I guess. As if it hasn't already, I suppose. I've been trying to find the stats on DeMarcus Lawrence. In his fourth season, 10.5 sacks so far this year in 7 games. Because I had the bye week. There was one. It was a nationally televised game when he just went off. I keep trying to remember what that game was. He had like 4 or 5 sacks in that game. Is this good radio?
Eh.
He had 3 sacks at Arizona. That wasn't even it. All right. Well, I failed. He's had a sack in every game this year. All right, what do I know? Nothing. Not a dang thing. So I'm taking the Chiefs in this game because I think the offense can control the pace. Am I super duper convinced that they will? No. It's a very faint hunch. But my hunch is that the offense can control the pace and that the defense will do enough to keep Ezekiel Elliott from running all over them. To keep Dak Prescott from throwing the ball deep constantly. Because they don't really have the deep threats. Dez Bryant's going to catch a bunch of passes. But I'm not terrified of him breaking out a couple of bombs. Tyreek Hill's a bigger threat to do that than Dez Bryant is. I also just wish the game was here already. I don't really want to wait till Sunday. I wish it was a Monday night game and that this was Monday. I don't really want today to be Monday. I want to have tomorrow off. I have to be here again Sunday, though, for the actual game itself. So that's something useful. But there you go. One thing this is going to require, by the way, for the Chiefs to control the pace of the game instead of letting the Cowboys do it, it would require the Chiefs doing a whole lot of running the ball. Not exactly Andy Reid's MO. This could be a very frustrating game. But I'm going to just roll with the Chiefs and pray that it turns out okay. The rest of the NFL games, real quick for this week. It's one of those home road splits where the home team is slightly worse. I'm going to go ahead and take the Panthers at home against the Falcons. They've traded away Kelvin Benjamin, which hurts them. But the Falcons have really looked relatively fragile as of late. So I'm going to take the Panthers as an upset pick at home. The Bengals at the Jags. I'll take the Jags at home. Broncos at Eagles is easy, which is, you know, fun and good. Brock Osweiler getting the start for the Denver Broncos, which is extra hilarious. Ravens at Titans is a game that I won't watch unless someone forces me to. But I'll take the Titans in that one. Colts at Texans. Good God. Good God.
Battle of the third string quarterbacks.
I mean, that game could have been Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck if Watson would have kept would have not stepped poorly in practice, and if the Colts would have managed Andrew Luck like an actual human being. Instead, it's Jacoby Brissett at Tom Savage. I'm going to take the Texans simply because they're at home. I would take the home team in that game either way, though. They have more weapons. Rams at Giants, that's a case where the road team is far and away better enough for me not to even think twice. Buccaneers at Saints, I'll take the Saints, but I'm not putting them in the Super Bowl yet. I don't know who was doing that, but that seems silly. Cardinals at Niners. Ugh. It's the Cardinals. I mean, man, Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job. It's Drew Stanton and Adrian Peterson versus C.J. Beathard and Carlos Hyde. Also, the Niners just put Pierre Garçon on the injured reserve. I want to gag. I'm going to go ahead and throw a dart at the Niners because bleep Drew Stanton. I might get cold feet and change to that one later on because I can't even imagine having to deal with that game. Thankfully, it's on the same time as the Chiefs game, so we won't have to. Washington at the Seahawks is surprisingly a blowout on the Pigskin Pick'em page. I don't think it's any sort of lock, but I'll take the Seahawks at home. I'm taking the Chiefs on the road. I don't feel great about it for reasons I've already laid out. Raiders at Dolphins is the Sunday Night Football game. Kind of interesting because it's an AFC West game, but the AFC West at this point kind of feels over to me. I don't have a huge, really any incentive for fearing the Broncos or the Raiders or the Chargers, but it's an AFC West game. There's a little bit of intrigue there. Jay Cutler comes back for the Dolphins. The Dolphins have a chance to still try to bleep around and end up with that wild card spot. I guess they just traded Jay Ajayi away, though. I'm going to go ahead and take the Raiders in Miami, but I don't feel any sort of good about it. And then Lions at Packers. It's always hard to pick the road team out on the road on Monday Night Football, national television game, whatever. But it's also Brett Hundley. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'll take the Lions on the road because I can't make myself. There are so many terrible backup quarterbacks playing this week. Hold on. Quarterback starting this week worse than Colin Kaepernick. We're going to play that game real quick. It's going to go down real smooth. Josh McCown. I would say Andy Dalton. I would definitely also say Blake Bortles. Brock Osweiler. You know what? I'll give you Joe Flacco. You can keep Joe Flacco. I'm not going to need him at this point. Jacoby Brissett. Tom Savage. Eli Manning? No, you know what? I'm not going to count Eli Manning either. Bite me. I'm not going to count Jameis Winston. No, I don't need him for this conversation point. Drew Stanton. Yup. C.J. Beathard. Yup. Brett Hundley. There are 9 quarterbacks this week, at least. Starting this week. Worse than Colin Kaepernick. Also, maybe Jay Cutler. Thank you, Beards. This happens on Fridays pretty frequently, where we have a big game to talk about and lots of issues, and Tom Bahali and Ezekiel Elliott and all the sound, and Andy Reid talking about Tom Bahali and blah, 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 blah. But it just became a very sportsy show today, for sure. Like, I peeked behind the curtain for you, dear listener. Watching Beards just bleep around on his phone this whole show has been really disconcerting. Nothing kills Beards' passion for this show quite like 2 hours of Chiefs Cowboys.
Actually, what kills it more is the technology not working.
That doesn't help, for sure.
No.
That's definitely not good for your mood.
Most of it was just making sure the stream was still working.
But that's essentially how I've seen this go, from my perspective looking through the glass here. I see you kind of look up, maybe check the audio, make sure the stream's still working, back to your phone as I blabber on about Ezekiel Elliott.
Just looking
for
other stuff to talk about, too, maybe.
Literally anything else to talk about.
I mean, not quite that far, but, you know.
By the way, I was wrong earlier. Beards' phone number is not a 913 number. His actual phone number is 816.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
The best signal that this station puts out. Like, we can reach Canada through Facebook.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Thank goodness, because the signal of the radio station doesn't reach the parking lot.
On ESPN Kansas City.
With the Wi-Fi problems that we've had, Facebook Live signal, if you will, hasn't really reached anywhere. It's the end of a week. A week with, as Beards and I think figured out before the show, with four really good shows. And today. Apparently Shaq tried to do that spicy chip thing without making a face. And he got pretty far into it. He also didn't eat the full chip. He ate like a third of it. And then he made a face. He made a couple faces. And he quit. Matt Shaq play-by-play brought to you by Premier Volvo.
No one.
I was trying to think Beards during the commercial break. Why the Friday shows tend to be the more serious ones, when I would imagine that for most sort of like sports talk radio places, Fridays are kind of like sillier, right? I think it's twofold. I think it's maybe three. Definitely though, because the Chiefs games coming up on the weekend are, you know, like our main event for how this show generally works. So we'd spend a lot of time working on that, getting that ready.
Usually Fridays and Mondays for those.
Right. But also on Friday, we've usually burnt through most of the funny. Like, I don't feel like I missed anything funny today that we should have talked about. Am I wrong on that?
Nothing I can think of. Kyrie said this is the first time he said like an intellectual coach, to which
Shot at LeBron's with that.
To which Ty Lue just stared off blankly into space like he always does. Other than that, I mean, nothing really.
Like the pizza wars cooled down.
For now. I mean, there was nothing funny from the Thursday night football game, other than the fact the Jets won.
Donald Trump's Twitter got deleted yesterday for like 10 minutes by a Twitter employee. They found out a customer service employee, during their last day at Twitter, deleted Donald Trump's Twitter account. And then it was restored soon after. That was pretty funny.
Has he come out and said anything yet? I haven't heard.
No, I kept looking out for it. No, he didn't say anything about that. He did, however, call Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas again, which is not only stupid but also racist. So at least that happened. Is this what you wanted? Is this what you wanted, Beards? Is this the nonsense that you were looking for?
I mean, it would help if there wasn't any nonsense to talk about. That's the issue.
This is something we didn't get to. I wanted to talk about on like Tuesday or something, that Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino had started also criticizing the NFL's replay process. Kevin Seifer article here on ESPN.com said Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino have lent their prominent voices to one of this season's most under-discussed takeaways. The two former NFL officiating chiefs, now analysts for Fox Sports, openly questioned this week whether the league's replay standards have changed after a series of surprising rulings from its New York command center. Pereira said he thinks it's the obvious part of NFL's clear and obvious standard has faded. Quote, "I'm tired of having to come onto the show," Pereira said, "and say, why are the plays being reversed and we can't find anything? Looking at the same video that they're looking at in New York, why in the heck are we having this discussion?" And the main reason this came up was after the overturning of Zach Miller's touchdown, where he almost lost his leg in the resulting injury. That got overturned, and that was all very confusing, and we still don't know what a catch is. It says here, Blandino was especially critical of the decision to overturn a touchdown by Chicago Bears tight end Zach Miller last Sunday in New Orleans. He said that Miller clearly completed the process of the catch before losing the ball, which also happened because his knee exploded on the play. Like, yes, he did let go of the ball after his knee exploded. In fact, Blandino here says was so certain about the call that if it had been originally ruled incomplete, he would have reversed it to a touchdown from the command center. And Blandino developed the NFL's replay system. So it's interesting that Blandino and Pereira are a couple of the guys here who are now saying we've got to do better with this, better with the nitpicking, better with the obviousness of the replay. That if you don't see an obvious missed call, then the call simply stands. So it wouldn't have helped out on that one Demetrius Harris touchdown. that wouldn't have helped the Chiefs there. It wouldn't help in a close but no cigar situation either direction. But I do buy a little bit the idea that I don't think I've ever argued for the human element, because that's simply a code for human error. And I don't think sports are good whenever there are errors made by the officiating crew. I don't think it's charming that umpires have different strike zones. I don't think it's charming that sometimes referees miss a call. So I don't argue in favor of the human element in officiating. Their entire purpose is to get things correct. However, I do understand just sticking with the ruling that was made on the field if you cannot make a clear distinction in the instant replay. But there has to be some form of a baseline there, because that was supposed to be the rule, right? You have to have clear and obvious cause to overturn a call. That seems to have significantly faded. And as that stays, confusing, as that stays fluctuating, whatever that standard is, then the replay system is always going to be a pain. It's always going to be inconsistent. And that's all I want from refereeing. I just want consistency. I want accuracy and consistency. And replay is supposed to help that. And recently, it hasn't been. It shouldn't be a last-ditch chance for a coach to just throw a flag or hope in the replay if it's a scoring play or a turnover, because those are reviewed by default. It shouldn't be a last-ditch effort for a team to catch a lucky break, because otherwise they're going to suffer the consequences of giving up a score. The replay should be thrown out. The challenge flag should be there. The replay should be overturned whenever you can see that the call was wrong. And that seems to be the prevailing line of thought, but it's not how it's being implemented, which is kind of frustrating. All right, I took a very sportsy day and made it more sportsy. I'm sorry.
By the way, I was looking. Trump did tweet something.
About the Twitter deletion?
He did.
Oh.
My Twitter account was taken down for 11 minutes by a rogue employee. I guess the world must have finally been getting out and having an impact.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that was it. Nothing exciting.
Is that a joke?
I don't know.
Oh my, there's so many tweets about Hillary Clinton. Sorry for the long. Oh, you're right. Okay. Yeah, I don't get this. My Twitter account was taken down for 11 minutes by a rogue employee. I guess the word must be finally getting out and having an impact.
Oh, I misspoke. I said world, I think.
You said world.
I did. Okay.
Word doesn't...
It doesn't change it that much.
Doesn't... No, I don't get it.
Huh.
It doesn't seem to be a joke, because the responses are just crushing him.
They will never not be.
Well, it's a mix of crushing him and humping his hump. But I don't know what that means. All right, breaking news. I'm confused by Donald Trump tweet. Are you happy Beard has something to mark? Beard was telling me during the commercial break that he's marked one thing this hour. And by marking, it's whenever, as we're recording on the computer that records the show, he just reaches over and taps F8. And it puts a little Q marker there. Yeah, just do it. That's him hitting a keyboard key. So he can go back in later and make that into one of our wonderful little liners that we have coming back from break.
Or use that in Last Week On.
You're right. Now, whenever Charlie was in here, or like the beginning of Seth Kaiser's interview yesterday, he marked like 30 things in a 5-minute span. Like, it was insane. It was a woodpecker producing the show. This hour, he said during the break, said, "I've like really like the saddest puppy," said,
I've only marked one thing this hour.
Really quickly, players only. Three of the four guys so far have taken the Cowboys in this game. The fourth guy has yet to make his selection.
Well, hurry up. What is it? Come on. Come on, fourth guy. Come on. Show us. No. No.
I guess we all have to live in the mystery. Thanks for listening this week. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Thank you, Beards. Good week. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.